Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Perek Dalet, Chapter 4 of Sefer Shmuel Bet. Yesterday, we learned of the drama surrounding the death of Avner ben Ner, Shaul's cousin and general, who had been the power behind the throne of Ishbosheth, the son of Shaul, who had shifted his loyalties and had been garnering support for the Malchut of David. Our Perek today opens with Ishbosheth, again going nameless in the text, and identified only as the son of Shaul, which at this point is his only claim to the throne, having neither the support of a Navi or a general, nor the strength of character to really lead on his own. Upon hearing of the death of Avner, he wrung his hands in despair, and all of Israel who had remained with Ishbosheth were alarmed, realizing that they had been left without a leader. We may wonder, if Avner had indeed shifted his allegiance to David, why would his death have caused alarm in the camp of Ishbosheth? One suggestion is that since Yoav was not punished by David, there were those who didn't believe that Yoav had acted on his own initiative, but rather assumed that he acted at the behest of David, who would now continue to punish all those who had supported Avner and Ishbosheth. Mishbetzot Zahav offers a somewhat more complex approach. In Parashat Vayichi, when Yaakov Avinu blessed Yehuda with the promise of the Malchut, Ramban discusses at some length the Malchut of Shaul. He suggests that had Shaul not sinned, his Malchut would not have been taken away completely, but he would have remained a lesser king, perhaps over a small number of tribes or as a semi-independent kingdom subject to the greater kingdom of Beit David. According to Mishbetzot Zahav, it was the realization of this vision that the supporters of Ishbosheth had been hoping for. And even when Avner went over to David, he too still cherished this idea and hadn't been hoping for the complete eradication of the house of Shaul, rather its subjugation under David's authority. Now that Avner was gone, there would be no one to facilitate the realization of this vision. In fact, the topic of today's perek is the complete dissolution of Beit Shaul. The narrative continues in Pasuk Bet, in which we are introduced to two officers in the army of Ben Shaul, as Ishbosheth is referred to in a derogatory tone, two sons of Rimmon HaBe'erati, named Rechav and Ba'ana. The Pasuk clarifies that Be'erot, which was a border city, in fact belongs to the tribe of Binyamin, which seems to have been a point of contention, and that the people of Be'erot, upon Shaul's death, had run away to Gitaim in fear of the Plishtim, where they remained until this day. Da'at Sofrim notes that their lineage is significant and warrants mention because it shows to what degree support for the Malchut of Beit Shaul had eroded. Even members of his own Shevet had turned against him, as we shall see. In Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, the Navi seems to digress from the story, telling us that Yehonatan ben Shaul had a son named Mephibosheth who was lame, Nechei Raglaim. This child was 5 years old when Shaul and Yehonatan were killed, and when the news reached the palace in Yisrael, his nursemaid assumed that as a surviving child of the king, Mephibosheth would certainly be in danger of being killed, so she grabbed him and tried to escape, and while she was running, he fell from her arms and became lame, thus disqualifying him from the melucha. With this detail, the point of the digression is clarified. The Navi is revealing to us that Ishbosheth is the sole surviving figure of the house of Shaul who might have qualified to be king. We hear no more about Mephibosheth in this chapter, but he will return later in the Sefer. Returning to the narrative in Pasuk He, verse 5, the two sons of Rimmon HaBe'erati, Rechav and Ba'ana, arrive at the home of Ishbosheth at the heat of the day while he was taking his customary afternoon nap. We then find two seemingly repetitive psukim. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vihine ba'u ad toch habayit lokche chitim, vayakuhu el hachomesh v'rechav uva'ana achiv nimlatu. And behold, they entered the house disguised as wheat merchants, and struck Ishbosheth a fatal blow, and Rechav and Ba'ana his brother escaped. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Vayavohu habayit, v'hu shochev al mitato b'chadar mishkavo, v'yakuhu v'yemituhu, Vayasiru et rosho, vayikhu et rosho, vayilchu derech ha'arava kol halayla. And they entered the house while Ishbosheth was sleeping, and smote him and killed him and removed his head. And they took his head and traveled through the Arava, the southern desert, all night. Why the repetition? According to the Mitzudot, the first pasuk gives us a general idea of what happened, while the second explores the story in more detail. Radak, however, suggests that they actually entered the room twice. The first time, disguised as wheat merchants, they killed Ishbosheth and quickly escaped. Once outside the room, they realized that they had forgotten something. In pursuit of what they assumed would be glory, they needed proof that they were the ones who had committed what they considered to be this heroic act of killing the king. Therefore, they entered the room a second time and cut off the king's head, which they then took with them. They traveled through the night until they reached Hebron, where they brought the head of Ishbosheth, perhaps lacking the proverbial silver platter, to David, saying proudly, Hine rosh Ishbosheth ben Shaul oivecha, asher bikesh et nafshecha, vayiten Hashem la'adoni hamelech nekamot hayom hazeh mishaul umizar'o. Here is the head of Ishbosheth, son of Shaul, your enemy, who sought to kill you. And may Hashem grant our master the king vengeance upon Shaul and all his descendants. David, upon receiving this offering, was rendered into complete shock. Vayomer lahim, Chai Hashem asher padait nafshi mikol tzara, in the name of Hashem, who has rescued me from every difficulty. When the messenger came to tell me of Shaul's death, and thought himself a herald bringing good tidings, I killed him there in Siklag for daring to bring me such news. How much more so, when evil people killed an innocent man asleep in his bed? I will certainly demand his blood from your hands and uproot you from the land. We can understand David's frustration. If he had killed the Amaleki youth for daring to lift a hand against Shaul, who was already mortally wounded on the battlefield and likely would have died anyway, how could Rechavan Ba'ana have expected him to react otherwise to their having killed an innocent king while blamelessly lying in his own bed? The only possible explanation is that Rechavan Ba'ana had gotten so carried away in their own bloodlust that they had ceased to think rationally. David characterizes them as evildoers who must be completely expunged from the land. They were irredeemable in their wickedness. The strongest weapon against the Yetzer Hara is the Seichel, the ability to think clearly, to recognize the difference between right and wrong, and to anticipate the consequences of each. Chazal tell us that a person is only able to sin im nichnas bo ruach shtut, if he is overtaken with a sort of temporary insanity, which does not absolve him from responsibility for his behavior. In such a failure of intellect as this, when what should have been patently obvious as wrongdoing is not only not identified as such, but is glorified, there is no excuse. Thus, David decrees extreme punishment. Vayitzav David et hanarim, vayahargum, vayikatzetsu et yedehem ve'et raglehem, vayitlu al habrecha b'chevron, ve'et rosh ishboshet lakachu vayikberu b'kever avner b'chevron. David gave orders to his servants, and they killed them, and cut off their hands and feet, and hung the bodies above the pool in Hebron, and the head of Ishbosheth they buried in the grave of Avner in Hebron. This brutal execution is a halachic anomaly. Normally, Jewish law does not allow mutilation of a body, even after death. Malbim explains that David instructed to cut off the hands that had performed the evil deed, and the feet that brought them to David in triumph over their heinous act, and he hung the bodies as a symbol that no one in the future should ever dare to kill a king. All of this, explains Malbim, was done according to the Din Melech, the right of the king to exact justice, and not according to Din Torah, which, as we said, would not normally allow for such practice. David, who had just described himself in the last perek as soft, vulnerable, was so horrified by the act of Rechavan Ba'ana, coming just a few short years after the episode with the Amaleki who killed Shaul, that he determined he must respond with extreme measures in an attempt to teach the nation at the outset of Malchut Beit David that this behavior is abhorrent, and there would be no tolerance for anyone who raised a hand against a king, now and forever. It is a bitter irony that the two who set themselves up as opponents of Beit David, Avner and Ishbosheth, are buried together in Hebron, David's capital city. It is the final symbol of the complete capitulation of the short-lived Malchut Beit Shaul to the everlasting Malchut of Beit David. Thank you for studying together Le'ilui Nishmat Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.